The drive continues with Need to Know Basis on TSN 1200.
Hour three of the drive. Lever Sage, Graham Creech, Matt Conisvito with you. Here's what you need to know on an off day for the Ottawa Senators, back on the practice ice tomorrow, getting set for their game on Thursday. You look around to some of the playoff races, a lot of games in the NHL tonight. And if you're still keeping the dream alive for the Ottawa Senators, you're going to need a Detroit win tonight as the Red Wings host the Pittsburgh Penguins. Over in the West, Calgary Flames trying to make the playoffs. They got their work cut out for them playing a red-hot LA Kings team tonight. They're 4 points back of the Winnipeg Jets, who are in San Jose to face the Sharks. Vancouver's in St. Louis, Dallas visit Chicago, Edmonton in Vegas. That's a good one. Nashville in Boston, Columbus visit the New York Rangers. You got the Raptors.
Can we move, before we move on from NHL, you like this interaction sometimes.
Love it.
Okay.
Need to know needs to become a segment, not just a little quick anecdote.
Last night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You got yourself Sens and Panthers. First game of the night, last game of the night, Oilers, Coyotes, both over under 7.5. What'd you end up doing? It was under in the Sens, over Oilers and Yotes.
The Oilers and Yotes couldn't make it high enough. Kind of felt like with the Sens, I didn't do anything with the Sens and Panthers. Glad I didn't. I would have put it on the over in that game. I just think some of the trends when you get to 7.5, and when we talk like that, that's total goals in the game, folks, combined with both teams, in case you don't know, when we say over-under, the over-under 7.5. So if there's 8 or more goals, that's over. And obviously, if there's not 7.5 goals combined, that's under. And usually, it's 7 at the most. Or 6.5, or 6, or even sometimes 5.5. But 7.5 is a rare sighting. But when you mix in, the only teams that I've really seen it with are Edmonton and Edmonton and Buffalo. But not a lot of games even with Florida. But usually when they put it at 7.5, there's a reason for it. And obviously it got close last night. Empty net goal helped. But it only got to 7 with the Senators and the Panthers. But the other game going over,
it was looking good too. Like there was 5 goals in the first period.
Yeah,
felt good about that one.
The trend when they go that high, you always think, like in your mind, you say, "Well, it's really, really high. They're probably not going to make that." And then usually it does go over. But it's interesting to me when lines are that high or like super low. Sometimes you can get like 2 really low scoring teams. You can get 5, which means that. Even if they land on 5, like it's a 3-2 game or a 4-1 game, you break even. You don't lose your money. 5's really low.
Meanwhile, McDavid hits 140 in that game.
Yeah.
I hope he gets to 150.
Feels like he will, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no stopping the guy. It's like whatever you think he can get to, he's probably going to get there. Big Raptors game tonight. They're at home to the Miami Heat, but right now they sit in the number 9 spot in the Eastern Conference and kind of hoping to avoid, you know, a play-in game to get even to the next round. You got to finish 7 or 8 to at least give yourself a chance in a, you know, best 2 of 3, something like that. So right now they're number 9, but they're tied with the Atlanta Hawks with the exact same record. And the Chicago Bulls are only 1 game back. Probably not going to catch Miami, but if they were ever thinking about catching Miami 3 games back of the Heat, they would have to beat them tonight. So starting to come down to it. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in where the Raptors are going to go, but they're a tough team. If they make a playoff round, they're going to be a tough out because they do defend really hard. Like, I know a lot of teams try in the playoffs, but it sounds so weird that they try all the time. Other teams don't try all the time. that the Raptors do, and I think that can really help them come playoff to kind of turn it up another level, but they just don't have a ton of talent right now on their team. A little frustrating to watch for me on a nightly basis, or at least try and follow them along. However, I'm hoping that they go up a little bit here, and a big win against Miami at home today would help in that. Bianca Andreescu put out a tweet today. I don't know how many people saw the injury. It looked brutal. And tweeted today, woke up with a brace on my foot. Anyone know what happened? On a serious note, though, it was the worst pain I've ever felt. Praying for nothing serious. Still waiting on official results. Thanks for everyone for your thoughts and kind words. Doesn't go unnoticed. I'm just hoping for her the best of news and maybe not the worst as we kind of approach some of the majors, and for her hoping that she can just be healthy. Just seems to be such a big thing in tennis. Staying healthy is so, so difficult to be able to do. And this isn't really in need to know, but it's amazing to me, and we see every day a little bit more and more on something about either Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love, or all three of them at the same time. Aaron Rodgers can't stop leaking information. He doesn't talk all that often, but he certainly leaks a lot of information. And then Matt LaFleur didn't exactly give what I would call a glowing review of Jordan Love, who is going to be the guy as soon as they do trade Aaron Rodgers. It's one thing to say for me as a head coach that, look, the expectations that Aaron Rodgers has set, nobody's going to achieve those. I mean, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play. But Matt LaFleur went on a little bit longer about, certainly I think we're fooling ourselves if we think he's going to go out there and perform at the level of Aaron Rodgers. This guy's a once-in-a-lifetime generational talent. I don't think it's necessarily started that way when he first started, but he progressed into that. And then he started talking about Jordan Love. It's going to be a progression. It's going to be different for him. I think we'll all have to temper our expectations. It's different when you're going into a game as a starter. It's going to be a process. Like, he keeps using all of these words to describe a guy who has sat on the bench and watched and learned. And
well, that's why, because they don't know. Well, like, they obviously have done their homework and scouting on his tools, but that's why you keep using those words, is because they don't really know what they're going to get from him. And that, like, to me, that just speaks volumes about the Aaron Rodgers situation. Like, they're willing to say, well, not willing, they want to say see you later to a guy that's won the MVP two of the last 3 years and is obviously, you know, his credentials for a guy, for an unknown, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't want to play there. So what are you going to do? Like,
I think they don't want him either.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's worn out his welcome. And, but why would you want him? Do you think he's going to lead the Jets anywhere? I don't. So,
look, I think he would be a massive upgrade.
But I don't.
You're not getting MVP Aaron Rodgers anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But
I don't think you're going to where you need to go.
Not getting Zach Wilson.
I don't think you're going where you need to go if you have Aaron Rodgers on your team, if you're Green Bay. Now, that doesn't mean anything about how you feel about the next guy. I think they should be more excited about a guy that's been sitting there in the weeds learning for a long time, just like Aaron Rodgers did. And
maybe they are excited. Maybe they're just
okay. I think he's
not allowing themselves to get too excited by saying it's going to be a process because this guy hasn't started games.
Yeah, I think it went on too long. And I think if you're Jordan Love, it's like, give me a little bit of credit here. I've been...
Well, Connors-Vitter, is that how he speaks patient all the time? Because, I don't follow him day to day. Maybe he's open like that with every subject.
Yeah, I think Lee's reading a bit too much into this. But I don't know. I'm just so, like,
done with Aaron.
Divorced from this topic until the trade happens. I was talking with our pal Elevator Dave, who's also a huge Packers fan. And he was all excited that Aaron Rodgers is done with the Packers. And I was like, Let's wait till he's traded, because who knows with Aaron Rodgers? Who knows what the heck's going to happen until it's actually done?
Was it you that said that? Was it Colin Cowherd?
Colin Cowherd had a hot take that he presented as such, but it was about, I think the clip that I watched was like 7 or 8 minutes long. And it was him basically, I won't go on 7 or 8 minutes here, but the scenario that he laid out is that it makes more sense for Aaron Rodgers, if he wants to compete for a Super Bowl, to stay in Green Bay. He's got a better chance in the NFC when you look at who the opposition is at quarterback in the AFC. And that given that, he thinks Aaron Rodgers is staying in Green Bay, and he's using all of, he's basically leveraging the New York Jets to get some of his friends and his guys' jobs. That Nathaniel Hackett was unhirable after his head coaching stint in Denver, but because the Jets wanted to lure Aaron Rodgers, they made him their OC. And Alan Lazard wasn't getting re-signed by Green Bay, and so Aaron Rodgers got him paid in New York, and he gave them the list, or he didn't give them the list of players that he knew wasn't, they weren't going to be re-signed. Mercedes Lewis, for example, in Green Bay. And so he's trying to get the Jets to give jobs to the guys that he wants to take care of. He wants to get paid, and he knows won't get paid in Green Bay. And then once all of these guys are signed by the Jets and have their jobs, he's going to say, you know what? I'm coming back for one more year in Green Bay. And it's insane. But would you put it past Aaron Rodgers to do something like this? And to be looking out for his guys? And so
that's why I hate weighing in on the conversation daily, because it's like, who knows with this guy?
Exactly. And when I saw that Colin, because I've talked... When he signed that extension before last season, I felt that that basically guaranteed 2 more years of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And it doesn't make sense. He's come out and said he intends to play for the Jets and all of that. But until the trade's done, I have this worrying feeling in the back of my brain that he's going to be back at Lambeau next season. And he's going to be quarterbacking for my team one more year. And Is Jordan Love going to be the quarterback of the Packers for the next 15 years? Because we got, 15, 16 years of Brett Favre, then 15, 16 years of Aaron Rodgers? Probably not. But Jordan Love's a team guy. Aaron Rodgers is a me guy. And I'm done having a me guy as my quarterback. You read about Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson going out to California to start working now with Jordan Love and trying to develop some chemistry. And and Aaron Rodgers, meanwhile, is not worried. He doesn't care about working with his receivers in the offseason. All he cares about is him. And it's the same thing. The longer even if he ends up going to New York, the longer he waits, the more of a learning curve it's going to be for his new teammates when he joins them. But that's Aaron Rodgers. And he has so much skill and talent that he's been able to overcome his selfishness for much of his career. But at this stage, at his age, you need more buy-in. And I'm done with that. So I want him gone. And I don't know that Jordan Love's going to be in the top half of quarterbacks in the NFC. I'd be thrilled if he is. But I want a guy who's invested in the team.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. To want that for your team that you cheer for. Lamar Jackson's name won't go away as well. So if I had to ask you guys right now who you think Lamar Jackson plays for come opening day, what would your answer be and why?
I'm deciding between two cities, and neither of them are Baltimore.
Okay.
My answers, I don't know which one, but I'm going to say Indianapolis and Atlanta.
I'll be very interested. Jim Irsay is very outspoken as the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. And I give him a lot of credit because this is a guy that seems to say, whether you agree with what he says or not, it's a completely different story. But he seems to say a lot of what the other people are thinking but won't say. Very outspoken this week about guaranteed contracts and how they're not good for the National Football League. And again, we can sit here and have a full 4-hour show on whether guaranteed contracts in other sports have helped or not. And some of the non-guaranteed contracts, yeah, guys get huge signing bonuses in the National Football League, but it's trending a little bit more towards some more guarantees. And Lamar Jackson wants a fully guaranteed contract. And that's his right to want that. I hope he gets it. I'm just saying Jim Irsay, as the owner of the Colts, has been very outspoken this week at how much he doesn't like them. Is there a compromise there somewhere? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm torn on this situation because I'm a Lamar Jackson supporter.
Yep.
Followed him for a long time in college and, you know, of course, into the NFL. And he's always had like this narrative on him, like, oh, he can't be a quarterback, or he needs to be a running back or a receiver, and all this stuff. Like, it's always, oh, he can. And now that he's proven that he can be an MVP in the NFL, oh, he can't win in the postseason, whatever. Like, it's always, there's always negativity around his name, right. It seems like. So I root for him. But at the same time, what he's asking for, and I don't mind that he's asking for it, but it's because one organization made a stupid deal,
mm-hmm.
that he, and for him, yeah, I'm better than him. And
that's Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, yeah. That you're talking about.
And so I don't mind that Baltimore's not, you know what? No, we're not. That was a bad deal, and we're not doing that. But at the same time, I can appreciate that Lamar doesn't feel he doesn't feel that what he's being offered, mm-hmm. from Baltimore is fair. So I'm kind of in the middle. Like I'm hoping that he gets his money and has success. I just on the other side of it, I don't really mind it. And Baltimore has had success traditionally with non-star QBs. Think of both of their Super Bowl titles.
Yep. Yeah, he's put himself in a spot, and when people say you're only worth what you can get, I hope he gets all of it. I'm just like you. Like, all he's done is prove people wrong his whole life, and there's still some weird thing about Lamar Jackson that he can't get it done. There's about, I don't even know how many. Is there 10 players in the National Football League that you would pay money to see play on their own, like at any point, at any time, you just pay money to see those guys play? I don't know how many there is. There's not that many, but Lamar Jackson's on the list.
Yeah, he is.
Right? Don't care who his receivers are or who his running backs are. I would pay to see Lamar Jackson play football. There aren't that many guys like that. I want him to succeed. I don't know if he's going to change the system because, as you said, the Cleveland Browns made, I mean, it's just a stupid decision, regardless of whether they have some success. It was a stupid decision to give Deshaun Watson all of that money and guarantee his money. And just because one team made a bad decision doesn't mean other teams have to follow. So I do agree with you in where the Baltimore Ravens are coming from. It's too bad they couldn't step up and give him a better offer, but he is representing himself. And if he wants a fully guaranteed contract with his injury history, it's going to be very difficult, I think, for some teams to step up and do that. I really do. So you say Indy or Atlanta. Matt, do you have a quick thought?
I think I'm going to go with Indianapolis as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we've seen the move from Baltimore to Indianapolis before with an Irsay, so why not again?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I don't know whether Jim Irsay is posturing. Doesn't seem to posture a lot when he talks about what he thinks should happen in the NFL.
Well, he's also liked tweets linking Lamar to the Colts.
Yep. For sure. So is it posturing?
Yeah, it reads to me like he's saying these things to try and leverage a better deal.
Right. Well, Indy sure needs him. I'll throw a dark horse out there. And I'll say the New England Patriots.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. I was thinking that yesterday, actually.
Read a little bit about it. And
that's what they need.
They have the money. They can guarantee the money. They would get away with it. Robert Kraft seems to do what he wants when he wants.
And that's what they're missing.
And that's what they're missing.
They're not beating all those teams with
no.
Mac Jones.
And
Lamar Jackson.
Right. And how long is Bill Belichick going to be around? Bill Belichick makes,
I like that answer,
makes players better. I don't know if that's the favorite.
It just doesn't feel like a move that Belichick would make.
Well, he and Mac Jones aren't getting along very well.
That's true.
So if he's not going to get along with Mac Jones and not going to get along with Lamar Jackson, then he's going to have to get along with somebody soon. Or that division is, I mean, that division, they are number four out of the four teams right now. And I'm really happy to say that because I hate the Patriots.
Where are they if they add Lamar?
Maybe not fourth anymore.
Not fourth for sure.
So while I wouldn't like to see it, it just makes a lot of sense. And I think the Patriots could pull it off. But we'll see. Hopefully it's somewhere. Lamar Jackson's going to be playing football soon. We'll take a break. Ian Mendez from The Athletic. When we come back here on The Drive on TSN 1200.
Let's get back to The Drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lee Versage, Graham Creech, Matt Conesvita. Maybe the quicker I talk, the quicker the music will end. Let's get to our guest. Hey, if you want to take away time from Ian Mendez from The Athletic, Matt, go ahead on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. But that'll be on you. Hello,
let's
Ian.
Let's be good teammates here.
Hello, Ian.
Wow. Speaking right over the key lyrics of Downtown.
Yeah, I don't know if he picked up. He either didn't pick up what Matt was doing or...
No, I've heard it before.
Yeah.
And he's done this. Done. Yeah, I'm done with it.
Done.
Okay. What's your alternate... You got to come up with alternate songs to set the tone.
Neil Young, Downtown.
Yeah.
See, simple. We're already done this conversation. Fantastic.
Yeah, maybe a little Billy Joel.
Exactly.
Joel Uptown.
Yeah, Uptown see?
Uptown Funk.
Ian, you've just, any suggestion you or Graham have made are better than the one we came in with.
Well, where did you guys, remember when like 2 months ago, people were trying to rename like Centertown, they're trying to call it SOPA. Do you remember this?
I don't.
South of Parliament. South
I
Parliament
read about
Hill,
it.
And they were trying to call it SOPA. So I don't know why I'm thinking of that now. But anyway.
Okay. What were you thinking yesterday after you got home from what was like a long day at the rink and Gary Bettman in town and Mark Sutcliffe talking and you were in the press conference with the commish. So when you finally kind of got home and had some time for it all to sink in, what did you come away with?
And I think my feeling going into this whole thing was we probably weren't going to get a ton of new information, like in terms of like some sizzling, piece of news or something really juicy for us to sink our teeth into. But I do think that there were a few little, we'll call them breadcrumbs or clues or hints dropped by Gary Bettman. And the number one thing for me is, let's talk about the arena. And I think it's fascinating to me because I think if you go back, you guys could easily find the audio because I know it exists somewhere on the internet. But you go back to 2017. If you guys remember, November of 2017, the Senators played an overseas game in Sweden, right? I think that was right around the Matt Duchene time.
First two games of Matt Duchene's Senator career.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
It all went downhill after that.
It sure did. And Gary Bettman does a media availability in Sweden. And at that point, there was all sorts of talk about the rink and everything and what's going to happen in the future in Ottawa. And he used the term vitally important. Okay? Vitally important to the future of the franchise, a downtown arena. And then you listen to him yesterday, and I thought Steve Lloyd just, in fact, I'll make an argument, there was more to glean from Gary Bettman from the Steve Lloyd interview than there was from his main media session. But he's on there with Lloydy, and he's openly musing about, maybe they'll just stay at Canadian Tire Center. and maybe they'll just go to LeBreton, but maybe there's a couple of other spots. And it is a, like, if you're asking me what's my one big takeaway, and again, this could all be posturing and it could all be about trying to get leverage for more land, but that's a significant about face or a 180 from a commissioner who has on the record been pretty darn adamant that this thing had to move downtown for the viability of the team. And look, I understand things change, perspectives change, all sorts of things change. But, you know, you don't often see, you know, heads of professional sports leagues just kind of flip-flop like that. And Gary has over the last, I guess now that was about 6 years ago, but that was my biggest takeaway from that.
For me, I just like the positivity around it. And as you said, I don't think I was expecting a whole ton of new information, but when he spoke about how vibrant this process is, it just takes me back to just seeing where the franchise was at and now where it is now. Like, how good a position is the Ottawa Senators in right now?
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, listen, you were sitting one row behind me in that press conference yesterday at Creech, and I think I experienced the same things you did, which was, this was not a... Look, when the commissioner of the NHL rolls into your city, whether it's Ottawa, Edmonton, Arizona, wherever it goes, like, there is a possibility that the session could become combative, testy, right? Like, I mean, we've seen it before, and... it was certainly not that, right? It was pretty positive. I would almost describe Gary Bettman as chill on that seat at the podium yesterday. You know, and I think, you know, and I think one of the questions I got a chance to ask him was, look, you've been commissioner of this league for 30 years. And I went back and looked. I'd kind of done a rough look before I had asked the question, but I went back and double-checked afterwards. Like, so Gary took over in February of 1993. Okay, February 1st, 1993, Gary Bettman's first day on the job. Since then, every NHL franchise has had an ownership change with the exception of four teams. That's it. Four teams. I think it's Detroit, Boston, Chicago, Calgary, whatever. Okay, so that's it. That means this guy has either overseen brand new expansion teams or sales or whatever for 28 other teams, and sometimes it's happened multiple occasions. So to hear him say that this is one of the most, I think what it was the word he used, vibrant processes he's been a part of, I think that's remarkable. Like when you go back and you think about most sales of NHL teams, they are done under quite a veil or cloak of secrecy. Think of and I understand part of it was there was a move involved, but, you know, think about the Winnipeg Jets and the Thrashers, that was really done under wraps. Even the Pittsburgh Penguins being sold to the Fenway Sports Group, I don't think there was a ton of lead-up and speculation into that. All of a sudden, it was one day, it's like, hey, by the way, the Penguins have been sold to the Boston Red Sox. This has been a really atypical sale. I don't think in terms of length, in terms of publicity, in terms of all that buzz, I'm having a hard time thinking of another sale of an NHL team in recent history that has sort of, you know, had this type of traction. So to hear him say, you know, say that, and understanding that 20 years ago he was in the same spot as commissioner of the NHL and overseeing an Ottawa Senators team that was plunged into bankruptcy, didn't have a lot of people that felt like that wanted to swoop in and rescue it to where they are now, I'm sure on some level he sat there and felt really satisfied to see where this franchise has kind of gone.
Yeah, for sure. Look, there's a vested interest, right, from Gary Bettman in the National Hockey League to get the most money out of the sale because of, I'm sure, money that the Ottawa Senators owe the National Hockey League. So I understand that, and sometimes when I listen to him, I go, it's all negotiating. It's all trying to drive up a price. It's all trying to do things just from their point of view. To look at what you wrote about, you know, back in December about whispers for other locations other than the Breton Flats, I think for a lot of people listening right now, Ian, they think, okay, we hear about this, but it's probably just a little negotiation, you know, in case, you know, they don't want to just give everything to the NCC and put themselves in a spot where they're going to get taken advantage of. So they'll say that there's other areas. Are there realistically other areas that this team could move to, or is this all a negotiation ploy to try and get the best deal out of the NCC?
Look, anytime people are kind of in this situation and they're talking to you, it's a negotiation, you got to take everything with a grain of salt. Not just a regular little piece of salt, like off your table. I'm talking like a piece of road salt, right? Like this, that big. Everything, absolutely, you should be very skeptical of anything anybody tells you, whether it's the mayor, whether it's the commissioner, whoever it is. Everybody's got a little bit of an agenda here. So you go into every conversation and with your ears and your eyes wide, wide open. Now, are there other sites within the city that would work? Yes, absolutely. I can tell you that when the Senators were originally studying LeBreton, so let's run this back to whatever that was, 2015, 16, kind of like the initial iteration of LeBreton. They looked at, you know, close to Bayview there, you know, where City Center is, that area. They looked at the D&D headquarters. They looked at the RCMP, kind of right by the ballpark. Those areas were brought up. Mark Sutcliffe was on your station last week with JR and Simmer, and he dropped a couple of spots, and not the least of which I thought was interesting was Herdman Station, right? Which, if you look at it, depending on how you want to get to Herdman, it could be a little bit inconvenient off Riverside, but if transit's running there, maybe it makes sense, kind of close to the 417. That idea was floated out there. I've talked about just when you get off the 417, in fact, as we're speaking here at 435, there's a good chance that Chuck, your listeners are stuck at some point. They could probably look at this.
I can see the traffic cams. You are correct.
Yeah, 417 at Nicholas and Mann, where you kind of get off, kind of close to Sandy Hill Arena. There's that parcel of land. It's Robinson Avenue, to be exact. I've been told that there's enough area there to do something. And then the other thing, and both Bettman and Mark Sutcliffe brought this up yesterday, and I really do think this is a last resort, but they're like, hey, what if we just stayed in Kanata? And I don't think that that's palatable for most people in this city. To me, once you've opened up the idea of a downtown arena, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle. Like, and I understand people who live in Stittsville and the West End and Kanata, I understand a lot of you do appreciate the rink there. But for the greater good of everybody, and that includes people in Gatineau and in Orleans and in Manotick or wherever, I think this needs to be downtown. And it's going to be really hard to stuff that genie back in the bottle if you're in Kanata. So, yes, long answer is there are multiple options, but again, they've gone so far down the road on LeBreton, and we've talked about LeBreton for, it feels like, forever. Boy, you're going to have to do a pretty good convincing sell job on the public here if you're going to switch locations at this stage of the game.
Before we move to other topics, here's Gary Bettman from 2017.
A new arena, downtown arena, I think is vitally important for the long-term future stability and competitiveness of the Senators, and the process is ongoing. But I think asking Mr. Melnick or the Senators as to the status of that would be more appropriate than asking us. However, we believe that there needs to be a solution for the long term.
So there's Gary Bettman back in 2017.
Yeah, and that was the term, right? Vitally important.
In you've had excellent coverage in this throughout this entire process, but I just wanted to get on to what we saw last night on the ice. And there's a number of topics, but I wanted to start with this one because we haven't even touched on it yet today on this show. But just Erik Brännström's game, I think he's been tremendous. We've seen lots of growth throughout the season, especially in the last month. DJ highlighted it. I don't know if you had a chance to see the goggle video yet, but I thought it was awesome. And the way he couldn't get the words out, and the boys just, they seemed to absolutely love it. What have you thought of his play, and just where do you weigh in on the debate of what he can be, and if there's value in having that as this team tries to win in the playoffs?
Yeah, no, there is. And I love DJ Smith's comment yesterday when he said, you go back in the last month, this is probably the best hockey Erik Brännström has played in the NHL level. Last week, I think against Tampa, he called Brännström their best defenseman in that 7-2 win. And I know the goal kind of got taken away from him yesterday, and they give it to Broussard, but he's starting to pop a little bit offensively, and it's really exciting to see. And this is taken, as we're sitting here talking about how long LeBreton has taken, it's been 4 years since they traded for Eric Brännström. And I think if you went back to February of 2019 when they engineered that trade with Vegas, and you would say, fast forward 4 years, and there's still going to be a debate around Eric Brännström, and he's not going to be in your top four, you would say, wow, that's a swing and a miss. Well, I'll tell you what, he is a really effective defenseman. And I think in the here and the now, if he's anchoring your third pair, be it on the left or the right side, I think you're in a great spot, because that means either Shabbat, Chychrun, or Sanderson is, you know, two of those guys are anchoring your top two pairs on the left. Chychrun's maybe on the right. Zub's up there. Like, Eric Brännström, like, can we at least end the debate as to whether or not he's a capable NHL defenseman? He is. He's killed some penalties. I think his complete 200-foot game has really evolved, and maybe it's taken a little bit longer than a lot of us would have liked, but he's here. He's arrived. And I think the interesting conundrum is going to be, he's up for a new contract. And look, this year was a one-year, $900,000 deal for Eric Brännström. And I think it was a kind of, we're not sure about you type of deal, and we don't know what you are. This is going to be fascinating, because I think now if you're the Brännström camp, you start, and I'm pretty sure he's got arbitration rights now, but you're starting to look ahead to the opening of unrestricted free agency in a couple of years. So if I'm the Brännström camp, I'm not signing anything that's going to bleed into my UFA years unless you're going to pay up. And I don't think that Ottawa's at a point where they could probably pay up. So I expect another kind of short bridge deal, something smaller, but you got to get this guy locked up. I've seen people saying, oh, you got to trade him. If he's anchoring your third pair, this is what we've wanted, isn't it? In Ottawa, we've wanted a solid top six. And if Eric Brännström is anchoring the third pairing, and he's playing 17 minutes a night and killing some penalties and can give you a little bit of offense, I don't know what else you'd want out of a third pairing defenseman.
I think it's amazing when you sit back and listen to people tell you that have been in the business, in the hockey business, for a very long time, that it takes 300 games for a defenseman to really tell you exactly what they are at the National Hockey League level. Eric Brännström's played 182. So I know it's 4 years, and I know it's been spread out a little bit more than I think some people would like, but he's played 182. Like, he's not even two-thirds of the way there yet to find out what, you know, what really people are at 300 games at the National Hockey League level as a defenseman. And I think we're seeing the evolution of it. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, I think we knew that Tim Stützle was going to be a superstar, but I don't know, Ian, that any player has come, like, as far for me that Tim Stützle has come. Like, you saw all the skill and you saw some of the dynamic play that he could have. But with the Josh Norris injury, taking over the number one center role, playing against, and Graham was going over it earlier, about just the last six or eight games, like Bergeron, Matthews, and Stamkos, and, like, just guy after guy that's a super...
Point, McKinnon, McDavid, Draisaitl.
Yeah, like... And he's had to play against all of them as the team's number one center with not a lot behind him at the center position. And I don't know that I've seen a maturation of, like, this guy's not only going to be a superstar, he's going to be a great leader on this team for a very, very long time.
You know what I really liked about Eric Brännström, Timmy Stützle last night, was post-game, one of the things he said was, I've been terrible lately. Mm-hmm. Terrible. And there's something about his accountability, and it's been there pretty much from day one, but this guy is super accountable. And when he's not playing well, and he got asked last night to kind of expand, well, why do you think you're playing terrible? And he's just talking about, he's not been strong on the puck. He's not doing the little things that he needs to do.
He mentioned not moving his feet, which is like, it feels like I wouldn't classify his play as terrible.
No, right. I mean, Brady Tkachuk kind of laughed at it, right? He's like, wow, he's being ridiculous. It's remarkable to see the growth year over year. Like if you had to ask yourself, how many players in the last 12 months have taken as big of a step in the entire league as Tim Stützle? What's your answer? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think Jack Hughes has gone to another stratosphere, but he's still a guy that was pretty darn good before. He's just gone to another level.
You should see Lee's face right now.
No, I know. Lee's waiting for Connor to drop the clip of Jack Hughes, a top five player from.
Never during your segment. We only drop Gary Bettman clips during your segment.
That's right. But here's the exciting thing about Tim. Number one, the Senators had the foresight to lock this guy up, because I'm telling you, if they didn't lock him up this year and he was going into the summer and he needed a new deal, I personally think that the number would start with a one. Like, I almost think he's pushed himself into a $10 million player. I think that highly of him. And to get him at the price that they got him, which is basically 8.5, it's a home run, grand slam deal for the Senators. And what's really exciting is I think you can have a legitimate conversation if this guy can be a 50-goal scorer. I'll tell you this. He just played his 200th game the other day. Take a look at Leon Draisaitl's stats after 200 games in the NHL. They're awfully close. In fact, they have the exact same shooting percentage. Stützle actually has a few more goals. They're both third overall picks, and obviously there's the home country connection, and they're different players, right? Like, Leon's a much bigger, physically imposing guy. Tim plays a little bit more flash and dash. But you just look at their first three seasons, and in season three is when Leon Draisaitl just took off. Season three is when Tim Stützle has taken off. And would it shock you if he pushed 40, 45 goals next season? No, because he's going to push 40 this season. So I think 50 is certainly within the realm. And, you know, I've never thought this at any point about anybody who's come through Ottawa in the last 8 or 9 years, but this is the guy that I think at the end of his career, if he stays healthy and he stays in Ottawa, this is a guy who could be a 500-goal scorer. He could be the guy that passes Daniel Alfredson for the all-time points and goals lead, and that's a really exciting prospect, I think, for this organization. I think that highly of this young man.
Do you have time for one more quick one?
I guess.
I love giving love to guys that we don't always talk about, like the Stützles and Sandersons, but what have you seen throughout the season from Travis Hamonic, the PP quarterback?
It's funny, isn't it? Like yesterday, you could tell DJ Smith. I know you did the post game show, right? So you heard some of the comments about Travis Hamonic on the power play. You know, I was doing something on Ice Time the other day since Jacob Chychrun came to Ottawa. So I was like, oh, let me just run back the numbers. I think it was March 2nd against the Rangers. And I was looking, I was like, wow, Travis Hamonic has the most points of any defenseman on this team in the last month. I think he's got 9 or 10 points in the month of March. And you think about that for a second. You know, they've got Thomas Chabot, they've got Sanderson, they've got Chychrun, and this guy's got the most points. And look, I will eat a huge piece of crow or humble pie, whatever you want to call it. When they trade for Travis Hamonic, I thought, boy, what are they doing here? What are you doing here? And I will take some on that, because he has been exactly what they needed. Now, the question becomes, what is he next season? I think if you can get him in a spot where he's kind of occupying the Nick Holden role, what Holden had this year, which is, you know, you do play a lot of nights, but you're mostly a third pairing guy. You could talk me into bringing Travis Hamonic back on a 1 year deal, probably a little less of a cap hit than he's making now at $3 million. I think he's been good in that room. I think he's been really good in terms of defensively blocking the shots. And I know, like, some of the underlying analytic numbers aren't fantastic on him, but some of his possession numbers are okay. I think for a third-pairing guy who has a heck of a slap shot, at times, I would bring him back, because I think this last month you've kind of seen what he can do for you defensively and kind of what he means to this group. And I think he would be a perfect number six guy next season.
Kept it too long, Ian, but we do appreciate the time.
This is just terrific content. We had to keep going.
Yeah. What do I get an outro song here? Like,
is outro the radio vocabulary that we need? Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was going to be something like,
no, it's generic.
Uptown Girl.
Yeah. It's generic.
Get
stuff.
One of those Steve Bunda record scratch and then up into Uptown Girl.
What's not generic, as Graham said, is your coverage, providing updates on the sale and the new arena. Got to read it all.
You're like reaching Ian level of your segues here.
In The Athletic, Ian Mendez, theathletic.com. We appreciate it very much.
Have a good one, guys.
See, there's your Uptown Girl. Now as you're leaving, and now I have to talk to Matt Conazvita. See, isn't this much better than his little dainty downtown song that he played?
This is good. This is the song.
Right.
Yeah. Or Neil. And, oh, we support
and
Neil.
And he did this dainty downtown song last time about trying to be funny about downtown. So I'm over it.
You don't think I played it just because I knew Ian would appreciate it because of the Seinfeld connection and that you would loathe it?
But this is much better.
Does he not like Seinfeld?
I love Seinfeld. I'm in the middle of rewatching all of Seinfeld. And it's so much better.
It's amazing you have time for that when you're watching all this wrestling and NASCAR tape.
Gunther Steiner was terrific on the NASCAR coverage. Just because I watched
what a great personality he is.
He was tremendous.
Do you know anything about him other than...
Yeah, he's the Haas.
No, I mean, like, were you aware of his personality before?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't. I knew of him, and I knew, he was a pretty good... Like a lot of people talked Drive to Survive that he was really good, but they brought him in because they were at their first road course of the year. NASCAR was in Texas. He was tremendous on the commentary.
Tremendous.
And they had a great race. Hey, triple overtime, baby. Yeah. See, you don't even know what that means, but I don't bring up NASCAR all the time. Like Kenny with F1 and everything. It's okay. No problem. Triple overtime.
I'm not talking any smack on NASCAR.
Triple overtime was amazing on the weekend.
Actually, you know what? I don't follow wrestling either. You just showed me the coolest wrestling move I've ever seen on a video. AEW, I think it was. I couldn't tell you who the wrestling
was. Vikingo
were.
And Kenny Omega. AEW.
Who was the one that did that?
Vikingo.
That was insane.
He's like a Mexican AAA champion. It was a 630 somersault off the second rope. Perfect landing. Put Omega through a table. It was incredible.
There was a Jeopardy category on wrestling last week. Kofi Kingston had one of the one
Did
of the
you
clues.
Get it?
I think I went 4 for 5 on the wrestling.
Okay.
I was very surprised with myself.
Nice. I'm impressed with that, especially the Kofi Kingston. You would get the Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, I knew.
Does he ever get credit for being the producer, the one who puts it on the site?
He's getting
versus
a
the
lot
one
of...
that doesn't actually do anything?
Yes. I can tell you the guy who doesn't do anything doesn't get any credit from me. I can tell
you
that.
He gets awards. He's
not for me. Matt.
Globally.
You're my award winner.
Thank you, Lee.
Okay. Let's go to break. We are...
Yeah, it's 5:05.
Very late. I think it's Ryan Knowles on the news and not Stephen Bunda, as we said last time. Steve convinced me that it was him, and then turned out Ryan Knowles was like, no, get out of my way. I'm the news guy.
You know how yesterday, and I brought it up today, I suggested he be known as Stephen?
Yeah.
He says he signs it Stephen Jack Bunda. I know we got
to
go.
All right. Ryan Knowles with the news. We'll come back with what you need to know and get you into hour 4 of the drive on TSN 1200.